the end of the day, it's like, how are you thinking about the consumer and building the best journey possible and the best experience for them? Because then you're going to drive the best outcome for the brand.
Okay, welcome back to the Marketing Playbook, presented by Veloo and Measured. Here, you'll take away three game-winning marketing plays every episode to take back to your team. I'm your host, Mark Friedman, and my career has been focused on direct-to-consumer marketing, direct mail, physical retail, and digital commerce. This is episode number 124, and my guest is Joe Milano. Joe is the Chief Digital Officer at Tapestry, and he has enjoyed an incredible career working for many well-known retailers. Like me, he has a financial background, and he's used that to help drive his understanding of the economics of the businesses that he has led. He shared some thoughts on how, in his role, he's helping the Tapestry brands continue their evolution to better service the customer, regardless of where they want to shop. We also covered his thoughts on measurement of marketing spend, the need for loyalty programs, and how we might all need to be a bit more selective on the technology that we choose to deploy. Joe is an interesting interview, so I hope you'll enjoy the show. Before we get started, a quick thank you, as always, to Max Brandstetter of the Wild Business Growth Podcast for producing this episode. You can reach him at max@maxpodcasting.com to help bring your podcast to life. Let's open the playbook. Ready, break. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining the Marketing Playbook podcast. Today, I'm joined by Joe Milano. Joe is the Chief Digital Officer at Tapestry, where he spearheads the digital transformation across all the company's brands. With a successful career spanning over two decades, he has consistently delivered transformative results through P&L leadership while up-leveling talent across organizations. Joe has held various leadership roles in marketing, digital operations, and e-commerce at prominent retailers such as Calvin Klein, Saks Fifth Avenue, Sears Holding Corporation, and Amazon's Shopbop division. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, it's good to finally get to meet you. Thank you for agreeing to do the show. I know everybody's busy. Hopefully, this will be a fun experience for you. Always like to start the show. We've done close to 125 shows now over 5 years. Started exactly the same way, getting the first story from the guest. Where you grew up, what there might be in your background that would have suggested that you would have had the career that you've had.
Wow, 5 years. I didn't realize that. Okay. That's a lot of pressure now to live up to all that excitement. Honestly, nothing in my background would tell you this is where I was going to go. I grew up in the Chicago area. Honestly, I'm a first generation. My father immigrated from Italy. Honestly, when I was growing up, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. Then I thought I wanted to be an economics professor. Both of those required more school, and I was not that interested in that, honestly. So I got into marketing and advertising and happened to, you know, bumble into startups. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, here's where I'm at today.
Well, yeah, you know, not everybody's got something in their background that suggests where they would be. Still interesting. Before we get into, you know, some of the history of your career, you talk in your bio about, you know, transformation. Does transformation ever stop?
No, I don't think so, right? And I think there's different ways to think about transformation. There's what I would call evolutionary transformation. There's orders of magnitude change. There's paradigm shifts. And when I think about those three kind of levels, evolutionary transformation is ongoing. Orders of magnitude, right? That's less frequent. And paradigm shifts are like, hey, Gen AI, you know, invent of the computer, modern retailing. But it's funny because, you know, especially being in like brand organizations, retail organizations throughout my career, from a consumer facing point of view, you're relying on change. Your whole business is predicated upon change. Without that change, what are you talking to consumers about, right? What gets them excited? New products, new services, new marketing, new ways of engaging, new experiences. And so internal change is always something talked about as like, that's, you know, maybe not a good thing, or, you know, that usually means something is going wrong. Well, no, change is something that's happening, whether things are going well, things are going poorly, and all things in between, because change is about adaption.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, you talk about change when you're good and when things are not going so good. So many companies that I talk to feel like they don't need to dig harder or change when things are going well. It seems like they wait until things go badly or business declines to start thinking about what should we do differently. Have you experienced any of that?
Yeah, that's the old, if it's not broke, don't fix it. We've been doing it this way. You know, everything's great. You know, we tested that 2 years ago. It's we don't need to look at it again. It's like, well, you know, are you doing the same exact thing you were doing 2 years ago? If you go back 5 years ago, go back 10 years ago, are things the same as they were then, as they are today? No, absolutely not. Right. And I think the important thing is understanding when to double down on the things that are going really well and change to fuel them, and to understand when if something isn't working, maybe it's not worth fixing, right? Sometimes people forget that. They think that everything that is broken needs to be fixed. Sometimes things that aren't working, aren't broken, and can't be fixed because they're no longer relevant or needed.
Early in your career, you did some consulting work, and then you moved to ShopUp. Interesting roles there, VP finance and admin. So, you know, I get this question all the time. How did a CPA move into catalog marketing and digital marketing? So you got some, you know, starts in finance and admin, and then moved into marketing. How did that happen for you?
Well, so earlier you asked me anything in my background that would, you know, tell you that I was going to go into something. I was like, no. And this is the perfect story of how I got into essentially what I am today. I was in consulting. I met the founders of ShopUp, who were, you know, awesome people. They didn't want to work with me professionally in that way, but they call me back and say, would you want to come work here? And I'm like, I don't know. You're in Wisconsin. I live in the Chicago. I'm like, sure, why not? It sounds really cool. You know, I like fashion. I like pop culture. And so I'm like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And, you know, the VP of finance, I mean, because I had a minor in finance in my background. And I came in basically as like the first kind of, you know, mini CFO for the company. And, you know, as the company grew and progressed, I was fortunate enough to have driven success in that role that allowed me to get to know the rest of the team, the founders better, where I was able to weigh in and lead in different areas over time. And, you know, during that, my time there, I was able to have a hand in, you know, almost, you know, every part of the business. And, you know, a lot of that was driven by, you know, the success we had as an organization, the success we had as a team, and the trust placed in me by the founders of the organization, which I was incredibly grateful for.
You had some time at Sears Holding, Sears and Kmart in the softlines area. Is it fair to say that, you know, while you were there, those businesses were already struggling?
That would be a fair assessment. Absolutely. But here's the thing that people don't realize about Sears Holdings and Kmart back then. From a digital perspective, e-com perspective, omni, capability-wise, was pretty advanced, Sears Holdings at the time. Buy online, pick up in store, ship from store, you reserve in store, marketplaces, all of those types of things that the companies embrace. Sears was ahead of the curve on it, capability-wise. Now, capabilities don't make brands at the end of the day, right? And so, like, the businesses were struggling. We were able to do things from a digital perspective that really drove success, you know, around some of those capabilities, some of the understanding of the consumer, you know, being able to personalize journeys. But overall, I think the Sears Holdings story is much, 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 much bigger than my piece of the world, which very big, still doesn't. We don't need to write that story on this podcast, I don't think.
You know, you had an interesting transition from that going to Saks, and maybe only interesting for me, but, you know, it's sometimes unusual to see folks go from, you know, to a luxury brand from a non-luxury brand. Was that something that was discussed, you know, as you were being courted by Saks?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know, typically, well, luxury brand, we're much more precious. And, you know, these non-luxury brands, like, no, these things are disposable. But the thing is, every brand has a story. They have an image. They have principles. They have, you know, attributes that the consumer looks for and believes in. And those things matter to the customers of those brands, whether luxury or non-luxury. That said, yeah, it was a conversation around, like, you know, how to think about that. And, you know, with the experiences I had at ShopUp, right? You know, dealing with more premium brands and my time. So the nice thing was I had what I would call innovative, small startup, high growth scale. And then I also had huge scale, massive store installation, you know, super complexity, kind of all of those things in the background that really kind of merge together, right? And then the thing you layer on top is that understanding of brand. And I think at the end of the day, like my ability as a leader, any leader, right, is to understand the brand and then apply the capabilities that are appropriate for that situation.
You've had a number of experiences where the brand that you worked for was a multi-channel business, owned stores, your own online business. How has that changed, you know, would you say, you know, from when you first started till now? You know, there was lots of angst, you know, about cannibalization, you know, from one channel to another. Do you see that still? And what else might be different or the same?
Yeah, you hit on it. I anybody who's been involved in this business for more than a few years probably knows about the store e-com stealing my sale, store stealing my sale. What's the revenue recognition on that? You know, who's going to get credit for that?
I never heard those things. I never heard, not once.
Not once. Well, yeah. Well, I didn't sense any sarcasm in there either. Those things were real. Listen, I hope we're past that. I think there's enough. I mean, it's 2025. And I think there's enough information in the world, and the world has evolved to a point. It all demos, all consumers, right? Gen Z, Gen X, Boomer, Millennial, you name it, right? And the way that somebody engages is so nonlinear, right? Like the customer, it's multidimensional. Everybody approaches in a way that works for them, right? From a consumer standpoint, every organization has to do the same. And, you know, digital sales, you know, physical sales is like benchmarks. Yeah, they're good. You need to understand the fundamentals, the KPIs that drive the businesses, right? But more importantly, you've got to understand how they impact one another, like what the differentiators are of each touch point. Digital is a transaction. That's one journey, right? That's just one reason, right? Somebody coming to the store to buy something, that's one reason. They could be there to look. They could be there just to browse. They could just be there because they heard there was something fun going on there. They could come online because they want to learn about the brand. Come online because they want to see the campaign. They might be researching something. They might be returning something. There's a number of different ways and reasons that people interact with you. And that's, and I'm just talking about like the brand or the retailer's touch. I'm not talking about all of the platform and like ancillary third parties that sit around that carry messaging and branding, right? So throughout my time, I think the most important thing we've tried to do is like really around like telling the story of the journey of the customer at the center, and then worrying about the accreditation or what hurdles might exist or impediments might exist.
Well, you know, I spent a bunch of time at Steve Madden, and you know, we obviously had stores and retail. You know, we always used to say, let's let the customer shop where they want to shop, try to give them the most consistent experience possible. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're here for the customer. So, you know, that seemed to work pretty well. Sticking with something like Madden, you had time at Calvin. One of the things that's interesting, and you're a brand guy, is it difficult to maintain that brand image when you're selling across so many different channels? You know, Calvin sells it at Costco. They sell in all the, you know, luxury department stores and everywhere in between.
It's a different challenge, right? And I think a lot of the time, it's even more incumbent on the brand to be clear about who the brand is and who the customer is and who the consumer is for that brand. And then who is the customer of that partner? Being able to articulate and clearly understand how each partner of the brand fits into the equation is critical. And then when you think about that, product differentiation also becomes a pretty sizable component, right? Because when you're talking about your products showing up in multiple places, you want to maintain the authenticity of the brand and the consistency of the experience. But you also have to understand that there's a reason that each of these partners exist to serve their customer. And so there has to be a bit of flexibility, but with guardrails placed around it. So is it harder in some ways? Yeah, it is. But it also gives the opportunity to expose yourself to different, you know, consumers that you might not necessarily cross as easily.
Think your customers are searching for a satin evening gown? Think again. AI search is changing everything. Shoppers are asking, what should I wear to a black tie wedding in Miami? If your catalog is still relying on outdated keywords, your products won't even show up. Veloo's AI-powered catalog agent transforms your product data so you stay visible, relevant, and ready for this new era of search. Don't get left behind. Learn more at Veloo.com. That is VELOU.com. Tapestry, let's go there. So for those that might not know, Tapestry holding company and owns a number of different brands. Which brands are they?
Yeah, so Tapestry, we operate Coach, Kate Spade, and Stuart Weitzman. For those that don't know, we recently entered into a new agreement to sell Stuart Weitzman to Caleres, which is public, and that deal is expected to close this summer.
Okay, great. Your role, Chief Digital Officer, has evolved over time, not necessarily yours specifically, but the title Chief Digital Officer. Can you talk a little bit about either specific to yours or what you perceive that role to be in many companies? What falls under the scope? Is it marketing? Is it technology? What is it?
I've been in the role for almost a year now, and it's interesting because this is the first time I've been on what I would call a centralized functional role, which has been quite different because my career has been all about owning the P&L, driving the business, running the brand, if you will. It's been eye-opening in a lot of ways. And one of the things that I said to the team is, because my role has kind of shifted since I moved over to Tapestry, when I was sitting over there, we had a lot of great people doing a lot of great work. And we've got a lot of great people doing a lot of great work here. And it's like, how do we start to bring all the great people doing all the great work together? Which I think we've done a really nice job of over the last several years. And so what does a role own, right? And I think, I can tell you the way that, we operate. We partner with our brand teams. We partner with our tech teams. We partner across the organization. But really what we do is we drive digital strategy, right? We enable foundations and capabilities. So you think about testing, optimization, CRM, MarTech, commerce tech, operations, reporting, analytics, like a number of different things that we help drive from a strategic foundational role. And then brands bring brand strategy on top of that in terms of how they want to express and show themselves up to the customer.
As I'm sure you're sitting across these multiple brands, things change so much. What are some of the, again, it doesn't have to be specific to Tapestry, but you see lots of brands. What are the few challenges that you're seeing? You go to conferences and you talk to your peers. What are they grappling with right now?
A few things, right? I mean, I'll say the obvious one first, right? Like how do we scale and drive Gen AI in an organization, right? Like that's, I'm not going to minimize that because I think that's super important. I think the opportunity from a paradigm shift is real. I do think it's real. I think we're just dipping our toes in right now. And so, there's a lot of FOMO that's out there. Unsurprisingly, right? Like that, every time something new comes up, people get excited. But this one is interesting. And so we're, that is certainly one. I think another one is how, and I've talked to people, how are you thinking about your investments across tech, teams, people, ways of working, right? To optimize. I think it's funny because I think Gen AI plays a part in that. And I think technology's advancement plays a part in that because I think there's a lot of talk around rationalization, right? Reason for being, right? And I think, in the past, you had a lot of things that really looked great in silos, right? But how do you discreetly measure their impact, right? And I think there's a lot of work put into discreetely measure impact of various tools and systems and processes. But realistically, those things that were never, they never stacked on top of one another, right? Like if you start to stack all those things up, it's like, wow, like this is fantastic. There was always some type of cannibalization. I think people are trying to understand, like, how do I start to think about that cannibalization in a meaningful way? So I'm driving and protecting and investing. And like we talked about earlier, in the big bets that are winning, and I'm starting to think about how do I scale back in the things that might not be as relevant anymore. And so I think that's a big conversation that people are having. And then I think, measurement, right? Like how are you measuring your marketing? How are you measuring your digital, right? And I think, again, similar to the whole, stores versus e-com or whatever, right? At the end of the day, it's like, how are you thinking about the consumer and building the best journey possible and the best experience for them? Because then you're going to drive the best outcome for the brand at the end of the day.
you know, you talk about measurement, and that was, you know, certainly something I wanted to make sure we hit on. Let's call it luxury brands, you know, tend to do lots of brand awareness spend in many different channels. And brand awareness is obviously a bit more difficult to measure the performance of that dollar spent as opposed to something that's more performance marketing, you know, focused. So how do you think about that? How does the company think about the next best dollar, the next best place to spend a dollar?
I always say to people, it's the curse of performance marketing and the curse of digital, because everything can be measured, right? Everything can be measured, so it must be measured, and it must be measured, and if it's measured, it must be right. Unfortunately, that's not always true, right? That goes back to say that somebody visits your site, and if they don't buy, that was a failure of an experience, for example. No, it wasn't. Like, how could you possibly know that? They might have been there just to find out where the store was. They could go shop there. I mean, 90%+ of purchases are, you know, either influenced or driven by digital, right? Like, when's the last time you did something without looking it up before you did it? Very rarely, right? Maybe grocery shopping, but even that, I mean, that's clearly disruptive, right? But yeah, when you get into measurement, you know, everything that can be measured will be measured, et cetera. Like, that's been said before. And so the key is, like, how do you have the right framework that allows you to think about what changes, what decisions you would make in the near term versus what changes you make over the longer horizon, right? And you've got different models that could potentially support that, right? You have near-term models, which help you think about, hey, for that next dollar in, like you just said, where's the best place to put it right now to drive incremental revenue? Okay, yeah, that's a good model. You should have that. And that needs to be not probably driven by last click, right? I mean, I'm not going to say that's bad or good. I mean, everybody makes their own choices. But then you also need a way to have a model that says, like, okay, over the horizon, you know, what's the right investment strategy at a more macro level, right? Like, how am I placing bets across the different touch points I could without getting into tactics, right? And then the key is how do you marry those two things up? So the strategic investment thesis doesn't, you know, put you in a place where you have no ability to optimize at the bottom, and vice versa, that you're not just optimizing everything at the bottom without thinking about how I'm building my brand at the top. Because if you're not building your brand at the top, eventually you're going to see a problem, right? You may not see it tomorrow, but consistently underinvesting there will create a massive problem over time.
You talked a little bit about technology before. You know, do you find that folks in your past fall into the, you know, shiny object syndrome focus? You know, how do you know when to make the bet on something new and try to implement it? And, you know, oftentimes folks make that bet and then they have a really tough time walking away from it if it didn't meet their expectations. You know, have you experienced that?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. There's been shiny objects, you know, magic mirrors or whatever you name it. Like, I'm just bringing that one up because that was one of my favorites. I was like, I don't get it. But yeah, there's been lots of shiny object syndrome. So the key is, you ask, like, how do you know when to bet? Well, I wish it was a simple formula, because then everybody would do it and they would do it well. And, you know, every business would be successful. Doesn't work that way, though. That's why you have people and leaders making choices and bets, you know, driving strategy at the end of the day. But what I will say is, something that early on in my time at ShopUp, Bob, who was, you know, the main founder of the business, said, you know, this is very early on in my career. And he's like, you know, when you think about, you know, how we're building online, it's like, how do we think about creating the best things about that store experience that consumers love online? And I think that very simple, logical advice applies in a number of ways, which is, like, how is this driving a better experience for the customer? Why are they going to want to engage with this? What is this going to do for them that is going to make their lives better? And if you can't answer that, like, it might not be useful. And so maybe you shouldn't invest in it.
What about tactics like, you know, post-purchase monetization and things that, you know, might work well for some brands, or the brand feels like it's not right for us because it's not the elevated experience? You know, how do you find that balance between saying, yeah, we don't do that here versus, yeah, it's something we would try?
It's conditional, depending on the experience, right? Is the experience disruptive? Is it distractive? Does it add to the brand? Does it take away from the brand? Does it fit within who the brand is? You know, is there synergy there in terms of what that branding message is versus what our branding message is? That has a lot to do with it. For example, you know, you buy something from us, like, then we send you a, an email to like go buy balloons, right? Like that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, how is that additive? I mean, just it dilutes our brand and doesn't really help the other brand either at that point. So that's how we think about it generally. I think, listen, if I to get a bit more specific for an organization, I think you have to think about, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I, the company, I'm trying to make incremental money off of my non-core business, or I'm creating a better experience for my customer? If you're not creating a better experience for your customer, I would just caution to think about it, because ultimately that could lead to you losing a customer.
Not sure if your ads are actually driving sales? Measured is the leading marketing effectiveness platform, helping enterprise omnichannel brands optimize their media funnel to business outcomes by revealing exactly which ads are working and which are wasting budget. Their AI-powered platform uniquely combines incremental lift testing and media mix modeling to give marketers accurate, always-on performance insights across all media channels. In 2024, Measured drove more than $3.5 billion in incremental sales for its customers, turning their media portfolios from cost centers into growth engines. If you're ready to uncover which ad dollars are truly incremental to your business, talk to the experts at measured.com. Let's talk about loyalty. It feels like loyalty has turned into one of those let's check the box kind of thing for many brands. Point of view on that?
I do. I would not check the box. That's my point of view. I think loyalty is built upon the experience you have with the brand. I think if you think engendering loyalty is by giving them a discount or some points, you're just incentivizing them to buy again through pricing at the end of the day. I'm not saying those things aren't good and are not accretive and cannot be super beneficial and help build the brand over time. That's not the reason you start a loyalty program, right? And so when I think about loyalty, it's about creating great experiences for people to want to come back. That's loyalty, right? And at the end of the day, I think, for what most companies do, you can find similar products or services elsewhere. I'm not saying it's like for like, right? Like, a handbag is not a handbag. I think, we have some of the, if not the highest quality, right? I mean, clearly biased. And you can say that about any industry at the end of the day, that they think they have the highest quality or the best. But from a consumer point of view, they may not agree with you. And so they may say, you know what? I didn't like the experience I had here. I'm going to go shop somewhere else. And if the aesthetic is important to them, or they find it to be similar or better, then they may switch. So if you think about that, and the switching cost being easy, just because I offered you a better price might not be enticing enough. And so when you think about truly creating loyalty, it has to be around the experience you create. And the experience is physical touch, digital look and feel, the product, the service, the branding, the mark, everything together, right? Because at the end of the day, if you think about online, you do have a great experience online, it'd be beautiful, product's wonderful. But at the end of the day, the only thing is they have the box that gets their house. And if that's not done well, that could disrupt the whole thing too.
Yeah, you touched on AI before as something that's, super important, getting a lot of brain cells from folks. I've had a few guests on the show talking about how they believe that websites as we know them today will be very different in the very not too distant future. People starting their search on any of the ChatGPTs, Perplexities of the world. Anything from Joe's perspective on what you think is coming?
These are just guesses. No, they're not all guesses, right? Some of these things are kind of happening. I mean, obviously, you just talked about the Perplexity, the ChatGPT, and then just the agents that are being created that allow purchases to be consummated completely off the site at that point. And I do think that's going to continue to grow. Do I think it's going to take over tomorrow? No, but the thing is, it'll hit a tipping point and then it'll just flip and people will be, wow, what happened? So I think, you've got to be aware and present of the emerging tech and trends, right? So that way, I think most retail and brand organizations don't need to be on the cutting edge, but I think they need to make sure that they're on the wave somewhere so they're not being washed over at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was going to make that the last question, but you talked about bleeding edge, cutting edge. There's that fine line, right, between being the leader and being the second to market in some things. Point of view?
If it's something that's going to help you differentiate your brand, then maybe it is worthwhile to be cutting edge. But if it's not, sometimes good enough is good enough, every company can't be great at every single thing that possibly exists, right? You've got to make sure that you're strategically allocating your resources appropriate, so that way you're most invested in the things that help make you special and differentiated to the consumer. And then you're maybe scaling back places where it's not as important in some cases.
Yeah, I like that.
Just like we talked about at the top, right? Which is like, sometimes you double down in places because you know it's going to win. And sometimes it's like, this actually isn't fixable because it's not broken. It's just that people don't care anymore.
Good stuff. We're down to the end of the show, Joe. We do a 2-minute drill, 7 questions, 1 word answer. Are you ready?
Yeah, I may cheat. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay. Well, cheat as in more than one word.
I don't know. Maybe. I'm just saying, like, you said one word. That's hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody sticks to one word.
Okay.
A brand that you admire or that inspires you?
2. Amazon and Vuari.
Favorite app on your phone?
Grok.
Oh, I just started playing around with Grok. It's quite good. There's a lot of good information there. I like it.
Fast.
Last website other than Amazon that you shopped from?
Whoop. I bought the new MG.
Okay. Something that you're not good at but wish that you were?
Filmmaking.
Charitable organization that you're passionate about?
ASPCA.
If you had one superpower, what would it be?
I'd be Iron Man.
Other than family, what's your most prized possession?
Memories.
Joe, if people wanted to reach out to you on social media, what's the best place to do so?
Listen, I'm on TikTok, I'm on X, I'm on Meta, LinkedIn. But I'll tell you, I'm a low user. If you really want to get a hold of me, probably LinkedIn, maybe Instagram.
All right. Well, great. Joe, it was really nice to chat. Congratulations on the good work that you're doing at Tapestry, and we'll stay in touch.
Great. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
That's it. Today's game ball goes to Joe Milano for coming on the Marketing Playbook. To me, today's 3 game-winning marketing plays were as follows. Number 1, we spoke about loyalty programs. It seems like so many brands simply check the box. Now we have a loyalty program. But be careful. Building loyalty is not just about offering points and a discount. As Joe noted, you need to create great experiences to help produce loyalty. So if you want to start a program, focus on the goals first, spend some time with core customers, and then develop a program that adheres to your brand guidelines. And number 2, measurement. This comes up a lot on this show. Just because you measure something doesn't mean that it's right. We seem to be very focused on measurement of buying outcomes on a site. Customer comes to the site, they don't shop, so we say that's a failure. In fact, often we just don't know. Maybe that customer went into your store after visiting the site, or they visited a retailer that also sells your products. So it's important to look at the 360 view of your customer journey before you decide if something was successful or not. And number 3, let the customer shop where they want, when they want, and how they want. We often are pushing customers to a particular channel. In the end, let's focus on the customer journey and the experience they have with your business. It should not really matter whether they buy online or in store or how you measure that sale. While important perhaps for you, it doesn't matter to the customer. They interacted with your brand. Be happy with that and then speak to your customer as a customer, not as an online or an offline shopper. Thank you, Playbook marketers, for listening to another episode. If you want to check out more pages of the Marketing Playbook, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast spot and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, the devil is in the details.